Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. This is me, your host, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is me, Manish.
All right. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how culture building can be a strong pillar to building an amazing marketing organization. And you might have seen me talking about two companies on LinkedIn, Gravy and Gong, the two G's that are absolutely crushing it on LinkedIn and as well as when it comes to the real business. What these guys have in common is the relentless focus on getting their culture right. Not just a culture of being focused on growth, but also a culture where people can fall back on each other. So today with us, we have the CEO of one of the G's, Casey Graham, the CEO of Gravy. And if you are on LinkedIn, there is no way that you do not know of Gravy. Casey is also the co-founder of Command AF, where he shares his LinkedIn learnings. And Casey comes with a history of starting and selling two companies. And if you have ever been part of any business, you know how much of an issue payment failure recovery is. And that's what the opportunity Casey saw, and that's how Gravy was born. So Casey, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am so fired up to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. So Casey, let's jump right in. You know, in this podcast, we are all about no fluff, no beating around. So I'm going to be very open in saying this. You know, 90% of the companies that say we are employee-centric are all about getting PR or improving hiring or, you know, stunts to get that coveted best place to work badge. And that fakeness, you know, kind of goes on to show how these folks come up with statements like customers for life. And in fact, I know of companies that try to brand their entire software category as customer for life software. I mean, it's shallow as shit. But, you know, when it comes to Gravy, I've seen this different. I mean, I know a lot of people on your team. I know Tara Hotzmeyer, I know Katie, I know Bria, and all these people are genuinely good folks. They, you know, they say things what they genuinely mean. And I would kind of map this directly to your hiring. What do you look for in people, and how come that everybody who joins Gravy seems to be quickly aligned to your culture?
Well, because I used to be the CEO in my previous companies, that I said that I cared about, team members, and we said that we cared about customers. But at the end of the day, I really was just trying to get rich, and I was not honest with myself about that. I was not honest with our team about that. And at the end of the day, the reason why this is so dramatically different and Gravy is so dramatically different is because you guys didn't catch me for the last 14 years of my entrepreneurial career when I was getting it wrong and doing it backwards and hurting people and not doing culture in a way that I would want it done. And so I say that to say it's not like this was our culture wasn't birthed out of some enlightenment of success. It was birthed out of the pain of doing it wrong and the failure of it. And so for everybody listening, hopefully you can take some advice from me would be, I think everybody serves as a warning or an example. I want to serve as a warning of what not to do, and then maybe as an example of what to do. And so to answer your question specifically, when we went to build this company, this would be the fourth company that I would start from ground up with my co-founder, Renee. And we said, I can't start this company in good faith unless we build what's called an owner's intent. And a lot of people don't know the concept of owner's intent. And owner's intent is, at the end of the day, if I own this business, but I also operate the business, that you wear two hats, owner, operator, right? Owner, the operator reports to the owner. And I said, I want to take off the operator hat before we get started in this thing. And I'm going to say, what is the owner going to demand that the operator does inside the business? What is that going to be? It took me 90 days to get gut level honest about what is the outcome that the owner is shooting for. And here's what it is. My owner's intent is to build an organization that I would want my adult children to work for one day. to build an organization I want my adult children to work for one day. And so it took me 90 days to get to that statement. And it took me 90 days to get honest about it. And so essentially it's about building something I'm proud of. I've never built something that I'm proud of. I've built things that made money. I've built things that scaled. I've never built something I'm proud of. So from the very beginning, it was all about, if I bring this person on with hiring, would I want my adult daughter, would I want my adult son to be mentored by that person? When they come on, what kind of feedback systems and what kind of feedback loops would I want my adult daughter or my adult son to have from their boss? It would be like, hey, if my son or daughter was screwing up in their job, what's the kind of conversations I would want somebody to have with them? And so everything is through the filter of, and we were birthed out of the filter of that owner's intent. And that has gone through our hiring process, and now it's multiplying, into a process. And people, it's not about the interview questions. It's not about what your personality type is. It's about the quality of your soul, and it's about, this is the kind of human being that I would want my adult kids to work for. And it's a simple filter, but that's where we started. Y'all may say that's the fluff I don't want to hear, but that's the truth. That's the culture, that's the ethos, that's the thing that's above all things. And so when I look out and I look around, I want to be proud of the people that we have, and I want to be proud of myself, and I want to show up every day, and I want to be the CEO that I would want my kids to work for one day.
No, it doesn't sound fluff at all, because I think your reputation as a brand, the brand that Gravy has earned, the reputation that it has earned, it shows, right? And that's the reason I think why we are talking today. I mean, Gravy is known for its employee-centric culture, and that's exactly the topic that we have chose for this episode. And I want to dig that deeper, the intense thing that you talked about, creating, building culture in Gravy. Tell us a little bit more about the culture that you have built in Gravy from day one, and tell us how it has impacted your business, and what are some of the learnings you have had along the way?
Yeah. Number one is that we were going to build virtual from day one. So for the last, almost 4 years now, Slack has been our headquarters from day one, and that was intentional. And the reason that mattered was we wanted to be a place that could just get the right people no matter where they were. Okay. So now that's become the norm, but before COVID, that wasn't the norm. But that was number one, is we just want the right people. So that was a cultural thing that we did. The second thing was that we hired back people from previous companies as the initial founding team. So the people that worked at some of our previous companies, that were some of our best people, we hired them back, and they created a foundation of quick culture success that we didn't have to like train them on who we are and all that kind of stuff. And so that was a benefit that we had, to be able to have six or seven of us, from the beginning, that already knew how to speak the language of culture and already knew how to speak the language of me and of Renee and of our co-founders. Another thing is our meeting rhythm. So this is a very big one. This is so overlooked. Most people hate meetings, but we believe meetings at Gravy from the very beginning, from day one, should be about inspiration, not information. We believe meetings should be about inspiration, not information. And so every Tuesday, since the beginning of Gravy, we call it Gravy Church, is basically what it is. It's like a weekly service that you show up to, and it is an hour long, 45 minutes. Sometimes we go an hour, but 45 minutes to an hour long. And the point of those meetings are, we inspire our team and help them build their lives. We don't talk about the company. We don't talk about finances. We don't talk about what we're doing and strategic initiatives. We talk about them. We help them with their lives. And so if you think like Tony Robbins, or if you think a motivational event, if you think having outside speakers come in, is that we do that every single week. And so now we have 85 people on our staff. If you calculate the time of 1 hour of all these people, this is the most expensive hour of our week from a time perspective, but it's built our culture the most to have an inspirational meeting to where people come in and we help them with their lives. You say, well, Casey, what do you mean help them with their lives? Well, we built a program called Decade of Destiny. And so when anybody joins our team, what we do is we want to help them leave Gravy better than they came in. And so one of the things that we are with our team is that we're open-handed. And so one of the reasons that we're allowing people to build a brand for themselves on LinkedIn, is we're not scared of them getting recruited away. We want them to get recruited away. I want to have a team of people that everybody wants. And so some people try to like cover their people up and keep them down. My thing is to give everybody a voice. And so the point is, when they come in, we help them with their lives. We help them in three areas of their lives. Number one is their relationships. Number two is in their finances. And number three is in their professional career and pathway. And we do energy and health and all this kind of stuff. And so we spend a lot of time helping people with their life plans, with their goals, you know. And so most of our company culture of why people love it is that we help them with their lives and we don't just talk about business all the time. So that weekly meeting is something that people overlook, but it can be the most powerful meeting in your culture if you don't talk about business and you help people with their lives. So those are some of the things that we've done. Another thing that we did from day one is what we call a gravy biscuit. And so we catch people doing what's right. And so inside of gravy, we have what's called gravy biscuits in Slack. I'm sorry, inside of Slack. And so what that means is that like anytime anybody does one of our core values well. And so let's just say one of our core values is that we don't take ourselves too seriously. And one of the things about we don't take ourselves too seriously is that we're open-handed, you know, in our work. If so, if I see somebody give away their job to somebody else or they don't keep a secret to themselves in sales and they say, hey, there's this thing over here, we call it out and we do a hashtag gravy biscuit and we call out that value. We call out the person and we have a culture of calling people and catching people doing what's right instead of catching people doing what's wrong and punishing them. And so those are some of the practical things that we do.
That's really impressive. And have you noticed any of these, you know, core cultural behaviors impact your business or your bottom line?
Oh, well, it's called return on culture. Yeah, we measure it. Return on culture. And most people don't measure return on culture. Our gross margin, listen, let me give you guys perspective. Everybody thinks gravy's so cool and LinkedIn, all this kind of, listen, what we do is boring and not fun. Nobody went to in their high school and said for a career day in high school, they didn't say, you know what I want to do is go be a payment saver and go save failed credit card pay. Like what people actually do every day is pretty boring from that perspective. And so we knew that this is not some glamorous, glitzy job that everybody's going to want to be a part of forever. And so we knew that coming in. And so because of that, we put so much emphasis on people getting benefit from helping them with their lives is that our employee turnover rate is basically non-existent unless it's people that we let go. And so people either stay forever or we let them go within the first, you know, 60 to 90 days because we can just tell it's not a good fit very fast. And so the return on culture is we're not having to train new people all the time. Our customers get an experience. And that's why the churn of our customers, we believe, is so low, is because the churn of our staff is so low. And so that's why our gross margin is so high. So the number one business impact we have from culture is our gross margin, because our gross margin is sick. It's really, really nice. And the reason why that is because of our culture.
Right. That's really amazing to hear, Casey. But correct me if I'm wrong. The way I see gravy is like you guys are less into the CAC side of things and more focused on LTV or, you know, CLV. That is however one might look at it from their industry standpoint. So tell us a little bit about the structure of your marketing team and what are the kind of goals that they are measured on?
Yeah, they're measured on SQOs, generating sales qualified opportunities. That's the number one thing that matters most. The thing above that would be booked calls, because to work with gravy, you have to talk with a sales executive. And so inside of our marketing team, everything we do, all of the activity we do and everything is to drive those two numbers, which would be booked calls. And then out of that would be SQOs. So, I mean, like it's really that simple. Now the structure of it, obviously we have demand. The demand side of things. We do demand in two ways. What we've done actually really, there's something we've done really well and something that we've really sucked at. Really well is that we've built the one-to-one marketing engine of, like when you say Tara Hortzmeyer, she actually was the first person in Britton Clark. They were the first people to go and do like the SDR. We call it an RDR, relational development representative. The classic term would be BDR or SDR. But, we do that really well. We have a team right now, I think of about 12 people that are doing that every single day, which is going out and reaching out to prospects to set appointments, but doing it in a fun, creative, personalized, lots of video, lots of let's export the gravy culture way. So we've done that well. We book a lot of calls that way. What we haven't done well, which we're just now building, is all of the SEO, the paid advertising, all of the technical side of marketing. We're just now really putting a lot of fuel to that fire. And so that's what we do. I mean, we have people that go out and they create conversations and book phone calls.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And since you are in the business of, reducing churn, what in your experience is the biggest reason for customer churn?
Because the product sucks.
Okay.
At the end of the day, people don't churn from things that they want. I mean, people aren't churning from Slack all of a sudden, right? So it's these next step down products that aren't integrated into people's lives that are kind of nice to haves, but they're not have to haves. And, a good example of that for me, and actually where, part of the idea of how Gravy got started is I got an email from LinkedIn years and years and years ago that just said, hey, your credit card's not working. And I was like, why the hell does LinkedIn charging me for anything? I never was even on LinkedIn. I didn't even know my password. And so I go on LinkedIn and it's charging me $79 a month. And it was on some business account. I didn't even know about it. And I churned. Well, because it was pointless to me at that point or whatever. So that's the number one reason that we see people churn. The number two reason is implementation of product. And so when people are after the buying, the expectation setting and what they bought, living up to that, and not just the stickiness, but the expectations of what the product will and will not do, is that way. So the way we say it is, the way a customer comes in is the way they go out. So if we see a lot of people that are really good at sales, they're really bad at churn. When I was growing up, there's this guy, Bozo the Clown. And so when I say Bozo the Clown, it's Bozo marketing tactics is what I call it. And so the companies that create more marketing tactics and more discounts and deals, that's the way that customer came in. You have to use the same Bozo marketing tactics to keep the customer on the back end as well. And so those are a couple of things. The product sucks. The expectation is not met. And then the third thing would be tactic-based selling and tactic-based marketing creates a really poor customer base for the long term.
Here's a key observation that I've noticed in Gravy. Let's say you give Tara four different rules and she still crosses it all. Or you ask Britain to take up partnerships and bam, your revenue flywheel partnerships on fire. So what I want to ask you next is, how do you determine which role to give to which person in Gravy? Even if they weren't your original, the original person you thought of in the role. And since I also brought it up, can you also tell our listeners a little bit about the revenue flywheel partnerships at Gravy?
Yeah, I'll start with that because that's pretty simple. Revenue flywheel partnerships is Gravy is a revenue. If you really think about what we do, we're a revenue company for companies. At the end of the day, we put more money back into their pocket. And so we're essentially like a back-end sales team at the end of the day. Like that's a simplified version of who we are is more money for them. And so an example would be like our partner, ClearBank. And so ClearBank would be considered a revenue flywheel partnership, meaning they lend money to e-commerce subscription-based companies based upon their growth trajectory. And so they are able to give advances and loans to them without diluting dilutive financing in that kind of way. So the faster that company grows, the more money that ClearBank can give to that company. So when they brought us in, we were coming in and working with their customer to create more revenue. And the more revenue that we were able to put back into the companies that we served at ClearBank, the more money ClearBank was able to lend out and make interest off of, and the more money then that the company had to drive more sales, which created more failed payments, which we recovered. And so it's a cyclical partnership, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does.
So those partnerships are the best for us because everybody's aligned around the same agenda, which is the customer growing. And so when we find those kind of things, it works. So it's the same way for VC firms, growth equity firms, private equity groups. That's a revenue flywheel partnership. They put money in to grow the company. They put us, they install us in to their portfolio. And then we're, for, not just for an individual company, but for the, we can do it for the entire portfolio. We're able to add exit value and LTV to all of their investments. So we're essentially like then an insurance policy to their investment. That's another example of a revenue flywheel partnership.
Right, right. That is beautiful. And the key part we also wanted to learn was, you know, many of the folks that are working on certain roles in your company weren't originally hired for that purpose. You know, that's where, you know, Manish asked about Tara getting four different roles or Britain getting a different role. So how is that people suddenly map into these new roles?
Well, I have a really simple answer on this. I think a great leader can go do anything, truly.
Right.
I believe that a great leader can go lead just about anything. People say, oh, well, could you? I think you could have a great, now, it's like when you get into the technical side of things, obviously you got to be able to speak the language, you know, on the tech side of things. But when we're talking revenue, we're talking marketing, some of the easier skills that you can pick up, Tara Hortzmeyer, she's a great leader. And so anytime, I read this one time by Jim Collins, he said, put your best people in your biggest opportunities. And so what we do is anything Tara touches, you know, it gets better. It grows. It works. And so anything Britain touches, it gets better. It grows. It works. And so any of those people that we see like that, that they just go and things get better, or things get bigger, or things grow, or clients have a better experience, then any opportunity we see that's untapped, those are the people that we tap them and ask them if they want to go do it. And so it's really that simple, is that the past behavior will be the best predictor of the future behavior. So there's this test called the Kolbe, and it's very practical. Everybody can do this. It's pretty cheap. And it basically measures that if you are not under stress and you were left alone to go accomplish a task, how would you do it? And there's four different categories. Like one is called fact finder, one is follow through, one is quick start. And so we look for in our organization, the people that you see jumping around, they're high in quick start, meaning they love to get things up and going, and they're entrepreneurs more than entrepreneurs. And they've got that entrepreneurial spirit to where they love to get things up and going, but they hate it when it becomes something they got to manage in a process. And so those two people specifically, easy to move around because they're high on quick start, meaning they can go into anything, get moving fast, get some momentum fast, and then they hand it off to somebody else.
Right, right. That makes sense. And, you know, Casey, like one thing that I've seen happen over and over with certain companies is that as they grow, you know, the leaders tend to fall out of touch with their frontline folks. I mean, in their defense, it's not easy. And there are too many variables that warrant the attention of the founders or CEOs in that position. And it is that phase where, you know, too much of politics gets into the middle management and people start to leave. And while it's easy to say this, this happens mainly in the growth phase, and we cannot afford to lose good individual contributors. In fact, I'll go on to even say that I sometimes judge companies based on my conversation with these individual contributors in those organizations. So for a leader, there is a huge gap between micromanaging and not being in touch at all. So how do you keep in touch with your frontline folks? Like, do you directly get involved in giving feedback?
There's two things I will say for this. One, I learned from a mentor of mine who's on our board named Ken Polk, is that spot checking. Spot checking is the key parts of your business as a founder or CEO that you know are key. And let me give you an example. I know a sales call is key. Okay, that's a big transition point for a customer. I know an implementation call is big. Okay, I know when you sign up to book a phone call to make sure somebody shows up, that the sequence that happens and the education before we get on the call, I know that's big. I know that the way people lead a team, their team meetings or one-on-ones or stand-up for our employee experience is big. And so the point of me saying that is that we lay out like, what are those 5 to 7 things that like, you just go, these are big things, but you don't want to micromanage them. But you create a system of either once a quarter, it could be once a month, it could be once a year, depending upon what you want to do, and you go spot check it. So one of the things that I do once a quarter is that I get a fake email address and I hit our chat up on our website and I act like I'm a sales lead. Well, I'm able to go through that process as a ghost and see it, but I'm not going to manage them. And I'm not going to give that person individual feedback on what they should and shouldn't do. It's going to be more of a macro approach where I would talk to the VP and say, hey, here was my experience. This is what happened, because it's not an indictment on just one person. So no, I don't give individualized sales coaching for that person. The other thing I do is that I listen to sales phone calls. So I'll get a batch of sales phone calls that are sent a couple times a year. And I just listen to them in my car, spot checking. And so that's one of the things I learned, that you can put your mind at ease because you know you're going to spot check, so you don't have to micromanage. So that would be number one. Number two is we do a class called Kool-Aid here. And I lead Kool-Aid with our co-founder. And Kool-Aid is the new team member onboarding culture experience class. And me and Renee still lead it. And we talk to everybody and we call every single person out of the class. And we have individual conversations with every single person. And every new person that joins, that we sit on the Zoom call and we hear from them in many Zoom calls. And we have an onboard. What drove that was, what would I want the CEO of my daughter's company to do? I'd want him to know her name and what her kids are, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so that's important to me. So I still do that and I stay connected as well. The other thing that I do is I lead Decade of Destiny. So Decade of Destiny is once a quarter, people are able to come and I lead a life planning sessions. And so I get a lot of interaction with people from a life planning side of things as well. And so that's a lot of the individual contributors and this, that, and the other. And so that's what we do. And then we have summits. Two times a year, we get together in person with all of our team. And it's 2.5 days where we work on their lives, not the business. And inside of that, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of connection, a lot of times at the bar where we have newcomers that can come sit with me, ask me questions, whatever. And then the last thing I do is that I got, do you guys remember the game Memory? Do y'all remember that board game?
Yeah, sure.
So I've created a memory game with cards for all of our team members of their kids' names, where they live, what position they're in, what their Enneagram number or Colby score is. And so me and my daughter, we work on memorizing all of their names, their kids' names, and those kind of things as well. And so from a personalized perspective, you know, when you're with 85 people, it's hard to just know that stuff. And so we intentionally try to learn each and every person.
Wow. That's going really deep into understanding people in person and all that. And a lot of things that you talked about right now touches upon accountability. And talking about accountability, if I had to pick a common theme at Gravy in helping out a customer in pain or to take accountability for the success of your team, two things stand out. That is empathy and speed. Is there something else you would like to add to that list?
No. If I had to think about it, the answer is no. You know, it's if you give a damn about people and you take care of them quick, it takes care of most of the problems that I've ever seen in business. And it really is that simple. And so no, I'm not going to add to it.
All right. Yeah. Sounds like that sums it up pretty nicely. So let me segue into the next question, which is, I've heard of this 55-cent principle in Gravy. Can you elaborate on that? What is the 55-cent principle at Gravy? What is it all
about? Yeah. So one of our team members' husband is one of my good friends, and he's a colonel in the Marines. He was talking about, he had this young Marine that was under his command. I mean, this guy commands like 3,000 people. So, I mean, this is one of 3,000. You talk about staff, that's a big staff. And he just saw this guy that was working under a car in the hot sun, 95 degrees and humid and every day. And he just kept seeing, he'd walk by him every day coming into work and the guy didn't have a smile on his face. He wasn't carrying himself like a Marine should. And he wasn't working with his full gusto and kind of having some problems with him. So he went and he wrote a handwritten thank you note to that kid's mom and talked about how that kid was a great Marine and how, you know, all of this positive stuff about him, and just sent the handwritten thank you note to the mom. A week later, he walks back by the kid, and he's running around smiling. He's high five, you know, he's, you know, got a great attitude for all this kind of stuff. And, you know, he came up and thanked him for the thank you note that he sent his mom, that somebody noticed him and this, that, and the other. And so Derek and I were sitting in a bar one day, and he said, "Casey, that thank you note cost me 55 cents to get that entire performance of one human being turned around. And it wasn't because of the note. It was because he was noticed." And so what I coined it as is the 55 cent principle, meaning that you have to treat everybody like a somebody. And handwritten thank you notes are literally one of the best ways that you can do that. Just by, I see so many CEOs, they say, "Well, we don't have time to do that. We have 300 people." Well, you can do it for one. And so one of the sayings that we say around here is, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And a lot of people up in, you know, different positions and executive positions think because they can't do it for everybody, they can't do it for somebody. And that's not true. And so the 55 cent principle is keeping at the forefront of your mind that for 55 cents, you can send something that could change somebody's perspective. You could change their life. They could be noticed. They could be seen, that they're going to tell their friends about it. They're going to put it on their refrigerator that they got a thank you note, you know, from the commanding officer or from the CEO or for somebody in, you know, the CTO or whatever it is. And this is a big deal to people, to be noticed and to be seen. And so inside of Gravy, we spend a lot of time noticing people individually, doing handwritten personal thank you notes to them, doing a lot of one-on-one time with them as humans. And then that spills over into our clients. And so what we challenge our team to do is to write more handwritten thank you notes to clients as humans than anything else. We have a care team. We have a care team that anytime our clients, we see them are in, you know, the hospital or having a baby or, you know, if something happens in their life. So we stalk them online and we send individual packages and we send individual notes. And so even as we scale as a company, we never want to lose touch that everybody is a somebody, and we want to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone.
I absolutely love this story, Casey. In fact, you know, it also reminds me of the conversation that we had with David Bax, the CEO of Handwritten. And he exactly told us the same thing, that, you know, how people would go about sticking those handwritten letters on the refrigerator and talk to everyone about it. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. So right now, you know, that brings us to, you know, the game segment of our podcast, which is called the Rapid Fire Round. So are you ready for it?
Let's do it.
All right. So the format is that, you know, we are going to ask you quick pointed questions. Your answers need not be short. You can go as you feel. There is no rule. That's the only rule here.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. All right. So here's the first question, and it's just based on what he just said. All right. Here I go. What's your first reaction to a founder of a company with, say, approximately a revenue of 2 million who comes to you and says, "I won't do it because it won't scale"?
I would say, what is your owner's intent? I would want to know what does that have to do with what you want out of the business? Because every single decision that you make, you've got to be clear on what you want to have happen in the end. And so when people talk about scale or not scale, I go, screw it. Why can't your business just be a business that is $2 million and throws off $1 million in profit? And so my first thing always when people are making decisions toward the future of their business is, what's your intention with the business and what does it matter to you? And for me, my owner's intent is, I want to work at a company that I want my adult kids to work at one day. Just, it doesn't scale to send a handwritten thank you note to every single team member. That doesn't scale, but it matters to me. But for somebody else, it might not matter to them. And so that's what the decision factor is for me in every single decision I make.
Right. Absolutely. Makes sense. And the question number two that I'm going to ask you is slightly a personal question. You know, I've like followed your career. I've, read about it and heard about it. So from being in a dark place in your life for several months and then coming up with, like, you know, 13 ideas in 14 months and then going on to building Gravy, a product that solves the pain point of pretty much every company that wants to make revenue, what has been your biggest learning and what are you thankful for?
That my wife is the biggest blessing in my life.
Sweet.
That through a dark time, the amount of forgiveness and really putting up with me and allowing me to move from the first 36 years of my life, I was driven by success. And now I'm 39, and my goal is to be driven by significance. I want it to matter. I don't need another dollar. I need another story. And I love stories, and story is my fuel. And so that was my biggest learning, is that with her, with my friends that carried me, because I'd always been the guy that carried people and helped people when they were in a tough time. And for the first time in my life, I got to where I needed to be carried. I needed to be helped. I was down. I was depressed. I was out. And watching my friends come carry me was huge. And then last but not least is, you know, the awareness that came through so much counseling and so much mental work and really digging into like my soul and what matters. And so I think a lot of what you see now from our team coming out on LinkedIn, everybody thinks it's just some strategy. It's really not. It's really the manifestation of working hard on our souls and our lives together inside of an organization. And you see people that are willing and happy to then go out and share what's going on in their life and the authenticity to have conversations that aren't normally had. Like this question that you would say seems personal, but it's not even personal at all. We share about this stuff and deeper stuff all the time inside of our organization. So we want to make those kind of things normal. And at the end of the day, we're human. And I feel like I'm becoming more human over time.
I absolutely love it. I think that's what life is all about. And thank you for sharing this story. You know, this is question number three. Like in the world of secret sauces, what made you suddenly move away and start Command AF and share your entire LinkedIn sauce?
Well, my favorite thing about sharing, I'll tell anybody how I do anything because most people won't do it. So I don't believe in secret sauces, you know, I mean, unless you have some, you know, the Coke recipe. Besides that, you know, the secret sauce is getting your ass up every day and implementing. And I could literally post everything we do and how we do it and exactly what we do and when we do it for gravy or anything. And so there are a few people that will. And so when we started learning about this thing of like watching it work, I started going, I bet there's other people. And so the number one way I know what business or what product to launch next is to think about what's the number one question I get asked the most. And the number one question I kept getting asked is, how do you get your team to do this? How do you get your team? Like, how do you get them to do that? And then how do I build a brand on LinkedIn? So I kept getting asked this question. So I said, listen, we're getting asked this question all the time, and I'm answering it, you know, 300 separate times. Let's just answer it inside of a company, and let's build a company that answers these questions. And then I also have a passion around this. I think hiring is broke, okay? You may say I'm going to go on a tangent or whatever. Sitting around, like, think about this. Sitting around and, like, people having interviews and talk, like, you can't get to reality in that stuff. Like, you can't get to reality. I mean, you can get better. And I know people say, well, they have, you know, follow the WHO process in this book and ask these questions, all this kind of stuff. But if you really dig into it, I mean, come on, at some point it's a gamble. I mean, you're taking a human being with all of their jacked up flaws and putting them in your company with all your jacked up flaws. And now we have 85 people that basically we all have a light side and we all have a dark side. And we're all getting together trying to do this one thing. Is I just think it's broken the way that it happens now. And I think the things that companies value of bringing people in and staff, I don't give two damns about what your college degree is. Our chief, you know, technology person didn't even go to college. Like, so it's not even like these kind of natural ways that people progress through hiring. It pisses me off. I want to know what that person says, who they are. I want to see a body of work over time. I want to see what they say when world events happen, how they're going to react online. I want to see all of this kind of stuff. So I believe that the best way is to have a body of work. And so essentially what we're going to help people do with the command is create a body of work. And inside of that body of work, they'll be able to get around the hiring lines and they'll be able to land the job, the opportunity, or, you know, whether it's side income or whether it's, you know, launching a book or a consulting career or their next software company, because they'll be able to meet, you know, the founder that they need to meet or whatever. I believe that that needs to happen. And LinkedIn's algorithm is so favorable for free, you know, showing your content to so many people right now is like, this is one of the biggest opportunities I've seen that nobody has really capitalized on. And that was the foundation of Command AF. That's why we want to do it. And I want to put resumes out of business. You know, our goal is to see 1 million people launch a personal brand via LinkedIn so that they can get what they want out of their career or out of their life. And so that's why we're doing it.
Right. You know, you didn't even go off tangent because, you know, I totally, you know, resonate with this because in my life, there's not even one time where I got a job because I applied via a job portal or spoke to an HR. It has always been a conversation with a CMO or a CEO starting on LinkedIn and moving on. So absolutely with you on that. All right. So here's question number four. You know, some companies build leaders for a specific domain, like say MarTech, FinTech, etc. You know, whereas some other companies like a Salesforce or a HubSpot, they go on to create leaders that are domain agnostic who go on to build amazing companies. So which side are you towards? Like what kind of leaders are you building?
I'm building people to get whatever they want out of life. So when people come in, I have my owner's intent. We ask them to build what's called aspirational intent. Some people don't want to go on and build anything. Some people are just here, and we have people be honest to say, I'm just here because I want to be a VP of sales at a company, whether it's at Gravy or another company. And then we help build them to either be that at Gravy or that at another company. We help them with that. I've got 7 different entrepreneurs that are here that they said, hey, we're joining the staff here because we started a company and it didn't go as well necessarily as we thought it was. And so we want to learn how to do entrepreneurship and culture. And we'll be in the marketing department, or I'll be the head of sales, or I'll do this for a period of time, but I'm going to go start my company one day. And so then we have them say that on the front end. And then I tell them, I want to be your first investor. I want you to be so good, and I want it to be so awesome, and I want your company to be great that I want to be your first investor. So come learn, come be here for a while and go do it. And some people, they just want to be a good mom. Like literally, they just want to make enough money so that their kids can play the sports they want to play and they can travel to the places they want to travel. And they want to do that. We want to help them do that. So I don't have one brand of leader I'm trying to create. We're trying to help people essentially get what they want out of life. And that's what I think you see spillover on LinkedIn. And that's why you see so many people that are non-programmatic in nature. They're not talking about the same things that people normally talk about, is because we're really heavy on you not following anybody else's dream for their life, but you having your dream for your life. And the number one thing I tell people coming in is, I will never have a bigger dream for your life than you will. Like, and you need to develop it. And if you don't have a dream for your life, you're not going to make it at Gravy, because we spend a lot of time doing that. So that's the kind of leaders I'm trying to build, is people that just ultimately get what they want.
Absolutely love it. All right. So here's the last question of the rapid fire section. What's your natural style of decision-making? Like, are you intuitive, or do you like to be data-driven? Maybe give us an example of a critical decision that you took at Gravy.
Naturally intuitive, surrounded by data-driven people that can inform my intuition with fact or fiction. I am intuitively wrong a lot. So I am intuitively wrong. So as we get bigger, my intuition on the details has been wrong. It's just wrong. And so the further down we go into the operations of the organization, the more data I need to support the decisions. Now, externally, my intuition is usually right. And so if I use my intuition, if you use it in the wrong way, it's kind of like using your X-ray vision. I tell people this all the time, is like, I'm a visionary. And so I'm either going to be visionary inside the company or outside the company. You don't want me being visionary inside your department, because it's going to be a freaking chaotic mess. I'm going to stir it up. Everybody's going to say, what the hell just happened? Everybody will be excited, but nobody will know what it is. The processes will go to hell, and it'll just be a burning flame of fire, right? So to start a company, that's a good thing. The intuition and figuring it out and all that, but to keep the company running is a bad thing. So I have to stay away from that and have to use my intuition and my visionary skills in the market. And that's what we're doing now. And that's what you've seen us as. And that's why I'm on the podcast here today, is that I focus now 90% of my time is external sniffing opportunities, meeting leaders, creating havoc in the market, creating storylines, marketing messages, big picture stuff, getting people talking about us. And that's what I'm good at. So it's intuition. I do listen to the data, but I don't make many operational decisions.
Well, Casey, what can I say? This was an amazing conversation we had tonight. And before we let you go, I want to ask you for one last favor. And that is, if you had to give a one-liner parting message to the listeners of our podcast, what would that be?
I would say, if you're not fulfilled in what you're doing, go to a counselor. Go figure out what is happening inside of you if you always need more or you're always haunted by your past. And go get down deep into you, because listen, how you feel about your life is the fulfillment of your life. And getting that settled, no matter where you are, no matter what country you're in, no matter how old you are, none of that matters, is that you're going to miss the meaning of life. You're going to miss the essence of life. And it's not about getting to an outcome or to an ending. It's about enjoying every single day and being fulfilled every single day in what you do and feeling called and purpose and passion for what you do. And that's what I would say.
Awesome. That's really deep and inspiring. I've never heard that before. And where can people connect with you in the online world, Casey?
I only have one place. It's just LinkedIn. I have no idea how to find me besides my name is Casey Graham. And, you know, our company is gravysolutions.io. If you want to check out the company, and that's it.
All right. Thank you, Casey. We really appreciate you taking out the time to join us today. And now we will be back with yet another interesting topic and guest next week. Until then, this is bye from me, Manish.
And this is bye from me, Yag. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.